This episode is sponsored by Tinuiti. Supply chain, more like supply pain. Tinuiti's deep e-commerce enterprise across Amazon and retail media can help your brand get its product on and off the shelves. Rethink performance with Tinuiti, the largest independent performance marketing firm across streaming TV and the triopoly of Google, Meta, and Amazon. Find out how at rethinkperformance.com. Hello, listeners. Today is Wednesday, January 4th. Welcome to Behind the Numbers, Reimagining Retail, an e-marketer podcast made possible by Tinuiti. This is the show where we talk about how retail collides with every part of our lives. I'm your host, Sarah Lebo. In today's episode, we're discussing retail trends for 2023. Joining me for today's episode, we have senior analyst Karina Perkins. Hey, Karina.
Hi, Sarah. Nice to be on board.
Thanks for being here. And also here, we have our principal analyst, Susie David Canyon. Welcome back, Susie.
Thanks. So excited to be on the first pod of the year.
This is actually the second pod of the year. Marcus put out a pod yesterday. It's our first retail pod.
Sorry, but I stand corrected.
Marcus is beating us. Marcus got to podcasting sooner.
You know how I do with losing.
Maybe you can ask Marcus.
to change the order.
All right, let's jump into our segment, Retail Me This, Retail Me That, where we discuss an interesting retail topic. Today, we are doing a special episode where we are spending the entire time discussing retail trends for 2023. Susie and Karina, you both put out two recent trends reports looking at 2023, which is the year we're in somehow. We're going to discuss a few of those trends and how they differ in the US versus the UK. Then after the break, Karina and Susie will share a few trends that didn't make the report, but that are still worth discussing. Our first trend persists across both the US and the UK, probably everywhere. It's a general focus on frugality and value. Our UK report mentions that two-thirds of UK adults are spending less on non-essentials due to increases in the cost of living. That's according to ONS data. Meanwhile, our US report mentions consumer bifurcation and hollowing out of the middle tier. Karina, can you expand on this trend?
Sure. So I think in the UK, we've got inflation running at a 40-year high, and we're seeing households of all income levels are really facing quite a serious squeeze on spending, and that's prompting them to think a lot more carefully about what they're buying. So we've seen them buying fewer items, they're trading down to cheaper brands or private label, and they're also choosing to buy secondhand. And that's really accelerating a shift towards frugality that we were already seeing because of concerns over sustainability. And we're seeing retailers really trying to tap into that by launching resale initiatives. eBay has reported a big surge in secondhand buying. And also we're seeing quite a few rental initiatives now. That's obviously been something for clothes, for going out for an occasion. But what we're seeing more and more now is rental initiatives that are high street fashion or clothing for the office. So that kind of everyday clothing rental is becoming more popular as well. So we really see this as a trend that's going to be quite big in 2023. We're going to see more retailers launching those sorts of initiatives because obviously they need to maintain a level of profitability.
Is everyday clothing rental as much of a thing in the US, Susie?
Yes. I mean, Rent the Runway had a minute of not doing so well, but it's back on track and it's doing better. Of course, they've started with the like not everyday, and then they went into workwear, and then now they do accessories, and they have different revenue streams in that you could have different subscription models, but also buy some of the items that have already been gently worn. So absolutely. And I think for us too, I mean, inflation, recession, all of these are global trends. What we're seeing in the US, which is a little bit different, I think, is that as people are making choices, it's that middle group that is the most impacted. The folks that are what we would have called middle class or middle household income have to make tougher choices and are starting to trade down or trade out. And so what we're predicting is that in the year, if brands are not really careful at crafting their value message and offering quality brand pricing sort of equations, they're really going to have a tough time. Gone are the brands that could be a little bit of everything to everybody. And even those aspirational luxury brands like the Ralph Laurens or Coaches are really going to have to be careful how they message, because the super luxury is doing well. We foresee that that's going to keep growing at a faster clip than regular retail, or all of retail put together, basically. But that middle tier that's trying to be a little bit of everything to everybody is going to have a tough time engaging with customers because they're starting to evaporate.
So is that middle tier going to move to a higher luxury tier messaging, or are they going to start using messages of value and discounts?
It seems to me like they're going to have to start messaging down. I think that that middle tier customer is also budget conscious and squeezed. And there was a minute in time when, you know, food and the regular basic replenishments were not as expensive. So they were able to stretch up and buy the aspirational luxury. But now they can't. They have to make choices. And obviously eating is the most important thing. And then the basics, which are not aspirational luxury.
Is it the same in the UK then, this middle tier sort of hollowing out?
To an extent, I think that's something that we always see when there's a squeeze on spending. It does tend to be that middle tier that suffers. But what's been really interesting in the UK, because interest rates are climbing and mortgage rates are potentially going up, we've seen it stretch. Really, that kind of squeeze on spending is really stretching across households of all income levels. So we're seeing people that would normally shop at Waitrose, buy their groceries at Waitrose, which is quite a kind of upper level supermarket. It's quality, it's expensive. They're trading all the way down to a discounter, so they're going to shop at Aldi instead. So it's not just the middle tier that's suffering here. I think, like Susie said, that kind of super luxury is always going to perform better because to some extent they're a little bit isolated from some of the inflationary pressures that we're seeing. But I think the middle tier is pretty wide in the UK.
And here too, I mean, I think we didn't define middle tier. And I think a lot of different studies define it a little bit differently. But there was one that was looking at income inequality, and it's the $100,000 or more household income. So that's not really ultra luxury, right, in any way, shape or form. And that band is really, really big for the middle income. But in the last, I think it was like the last 5 years, there was a moment in time, especially if you think about COVID and all the extra money that the government was giving, that that tier was saving money. And now they're not saving money. And it's the first time they're not saving money in like 5 or 6 years, which is part of the problem, right? So they don't have money to spend on quote unquote frivolous things. And they need to purchase the things that are important to their day to day as their wallets are getting stretched. So back to the example that Karina gave, we saw that too in the Walmart investor call, where they were saying they're seeing a lot more higher end, quote unquote, shoppers that are coming to them to buy groceries and basics, which makes sense. I mean, Kraft macaroni and cheese is Kraft macaroni and cheese, regardless of where you buy it.
Yeah, but at my bodega, it's like $4 these days.
Yes, because you need the convenience. You're charging a convenience premium. I think, well, poor bodegas, they're going to have a tough time.
We do have two more trends to talk through in this first half. Another one mentioned in our UK report is click and collect. We expect click and collect sales to outpace wider e-commerce this year in the UK. Karina, can you tell us more about click and collect and why it's so popular in the UK?
Yeah, so click and collect has been something that's been popular for quite a long time in the UK, but it really gathered pace during the pandemic when a lot of physical stores were shut and delivery slots were sometimes hard to come by, I think particularly in areas like grocery. And it's been really interesting because since the end of pandemic-related restrictions, we've seen e-commerce sales start to dip back down because people have returned to stores at a much faster rate than we expected. But click and collect continues to grow, and it's really outpacing e-commerce now. And I think that's partly because people still really want the convenience of shopping and ordering online, but they've returned to workplaces, they're out socializing, and delivery isn't as a convenient option as it used to be during lockdowns. I think it's also possibly inflationary related. People don't want to pay a delivery fee when they're already having to be really careful with what they're spending. So what we're seeing here, which is really interesting, is it's been pretty widespread across retail for quite a long time, but we're seeing some players that you really wouldn't expect to offer click and collect start launching click and collect. So Primark, which has always been, it's a budget fashion retailer, it's always been very dedicated bricks and mortar, and it's launched click and collect really as a way to have some kind of digital offer, because although people are returning to physical stores, what we're seeing is this kind of embracing of hybrid shopping. People want to be able to shop across digital and physical. And then at the other end of the spectrum, we're seeing the rapid delivery players who emerge, like Getir and Gorillas and Deliveroo. They're all trialing click and collect from dark stores in London. So they were very kind of dedicated delivery players who are now understanding that actually some people really want click and collect as a more convenient and cheaper option.
And when you say dark stores, do you mean like functional distribution centers?
Yeah. So okay. Essentially stores that were always set up just to be able to distribute that food more quickly, they're now actually allowing collection from those stores.
Sure.
And I think that quick commerce is so expensive, right? And so now people are out and about. So here it's really not doing well, even with the, some of them are trialing the dark stores, but I think for them, the markup on what they were selling is so high. And then you add the delivery fee, which was so high. Nobody has that must have in the next 10 minutes sort of need anymore when they're counting their pennies.
Sure.
Exactly that. And I think click and collect also offers that kind of must have immediately, because you can literally click it in, reserve it in store. And some people are doing fulfillment time now as little as 30 minutes. So you have that ability to shop online, but then immediately get your hand on it and you don't have to pay any kind of delivery fee.
Right. And I think, you know, Sarah, in the US, click and collect has, same as the UK, right? We've had that for a very long time. It's just that the pandemic forced consumers to adopt new technologies at a more quick rate. And retailers started to think through the logistics of that technology, right? So click and collect was very clunky before COVID, and then everybody was forced to use it. And so now there are dedicated service centers in retail areas. We're hearing about companies like Target opening different types of store formats to facilitate click and collect. I mean, everybody had to turn on a dime, both consumers and retailers, and now they're just trying to figure out what makes sense. There are some studies that say if you're doing specifically the click and collect pickup in the store versus picking up curbside, that there is a chance you can get even more that customer to purchase even more. And so thinking through the halo effect is also quite interesting for retailers.
The halo effect meaning how it bleeds into buying other things.
Correct. Yeah.
It's interesting as well how retailers are having to look into how to reduce some of the frictions, because if you have a store that's suddenly doing a lot of click and collect, then you have the staff who are potentially distracted away from serving people in the here and now who are buying in the store. So we're seeing retailers embrace technology as a way to solve that. So M&S, for example, has kind of self-service booths for click and collect. And they're also then using that for in-store returns. So people can come in and return an item, scan it and leave it there.
And so the other thing is the inventory, right? The picker is getting the same inventory as the person in the store shopping for themselves. And so we did see during the worst of the supply chain snafus that some shelves were half empty because the pickers were taking everything. And that was very frustrating for clients who went to do their own shopping. And so I think technology is really enabling that sort of inventory flow to be a little bit better organized.
Yeah, it's all click and collect now.
It's interesting. We've seen some of the grocers here as well. They've been offering click and collect for a long time. And as they see demand continue to grow, they're looking at ways to really improve that offer and reduce those frictions. And that's not always technology. We've seen some Tesco is offering a click and collect pass. So it's like a delivery pass. So it's cheaper. They do have a small charge for click and collect and it makes it cheaper. Or we've seen the co-op is experimenting with click and collect hatches. And that's, again, a way to just try and reduce queues and reduce the impact on the wider store. So I think we're going to see a lot more of that from across retail as retailers try and work out how to make it sort of fast and convenient.
I agree. And that's across everything, right? It's not just click and collect. The whole premise is for a shopper who doesn't have a lot of money in a recessionary time with inflation, everything being so expensive, how can you make it so easy and fast and convenient and as frictionless as possible so that they choose you because they have so many options?
So I want to revisit store formats more in the second half. But for now, let's move on to our next topic. The last trend I want to talk through in these reports is return policies, which we say will make or break retail loyalty in the US. Free returns are no longer the norm in the US for US retailers. Susie, what can we expect to see here?
So I think I would rephrase it to not that it's not the norm. It's just that retailers are taking such a hit. The cost of goods is so high for a retailer. All the inputs from fuel, cargo shipping, the cost of the commodity like cotton. And so margins are even more razor thin. And consumers have always been doing what we call bracketing, which is buying multiple colors or sizes of something, picking the one that they like, and then, you know, using online shopping with easy returns as a way to do fitting rooms in your own apartment or in your own house. And so retailers are looking for a way to protect their margin as best they can and to unincentivize consumers from just doing these kind of poor behaviors that are not only not good for a retailer margin, but they're not good for the environment. And so you're starting to see a lot of the European companies who I think were already starting to do that anyways in Europe, starting to do it here. Like Zara has a cost associated to returns. Now, these aren't returns when you go to the store. If you buy something online and return it to the store, that's fine. But if you buy something online and return it online, then you're paying for it. And it's also now American brands like J. Crew. It's almost like you're paying for the shipping. And potentially in some use cases, and depending on the product, you might be paying restocking fees as well. So we think that that's going to be even more important. You know, even so, you might not be charging, but instead of doing a 6-month return policy, you might only do 30-day return policy, because there's also all that inventory that's out there in the consumer's hands that is not going to ever get sold because the customer's holding onto it without any intention of keeping it.
Yeah, I think that this is good. I think that returns should be discouraged when it's buying in bulk, holding on to things, trying them on, and then like shipping them back. On the other hand, I also think that this is sort of returns being sticky is what's going to prevent, like, I don't want to say the next era in e-commerce, but I think if returns were easy and free, we would have like mass e-commerce adoption for clothing even more than we have now. And just like making returns that much more difficult sort of prevents that.
But I mean, technically, that's where we are. That is our current state of the affairs, right? You can buy whatever you want, return it however you want. It used to be like 6 months, but now they're starting to tighten it and have more guardrails around returns. I mean, apparel is still around 30% online penetration. So it's much higher than the average. But I think that if anything, these return policies will make potentially could have a negative impact on e-commerce penetration in apparel or in any category, really, because then you're just going to go to the store and try it all on there and then make the purchase. But I think it's a must for both an economic business sense, but also for the world.
I think it's going to be interesting how it plays out in the current inflationary environment as well, because I think it's quite a brave move. We see a lot of consumer research here that shows that having to pay for returns is one thing that would really put people off from buying from a particular brand or retailer. So I think we're going to see some retailers really hold fast and try and still offer that service as a way to compete, because retailers can't all compete on price. You're just going to end up in a big sort of battle for the lowest price. So service and that ease of shopping, as we said earlier, is going to become really important. But I agree with you. The problem is that the impact on margins from not charging for returns is potentially so big that retailers are going to be forced into it eventually. And I think that's why here we're seeing people like M&S really experimenting with the in-store returns and how to sort of incentivize in-store returns, because that's cheaper for the retailer. As long as they can manage that impact on the store, it's cheaper for the retailer and it's cheaper for the customer, and it's a win all around.
And you know what? Returns is not a new issue, right? And the inflationary times has just put a different spotlight on it. It's not just the customer returning the item that's expensive, right? It's the whole process to get that item to the customer in the first place, who probably was not going to keep it potentially. Returns are not new, and it's you have to just figure out how do you make it cost effective without, like Karina said, turning off the customer.
Yeah, and I think one last thing is we might see brands and retailers use kind of VR and AI technology a bit more to give people a better idea of what the right size is to buy, how something's going to look in their house, or how a watch is going to look on their wrist and so on. So that's potentially going to help. Yeah.
Gotcha. So those digital fitting rooms are going to sort of take over where returns were.
Exactly.
Okay. Thank you for sharing those trends. We're going to keep going with retail trends for 2023. So we've discussed inflation and value, click and collect, and returns. Now I want to talk more about something we hit on in the first half, which is the convergence of online and in-store shopping. So Karina, can you expand on what this trend looks like in the UK?
Yeah. So as you said, I think we've touched on this before. This is about people embracing now both physical and digital shopping, and they want to do both, and they really want a seamless experience across both. And I think it's just going to become increasingly important for the retail sector to offer, because as we've said before, we've got an inflationary environment that's testing loyalty, but retailers can't always compete on price. So experience is going to become really, really key. And if retailers can find ways to reduce frictions and make the in-store shopping experience and the digital shopping experience more enjoyable, then they're potentially going to have an edge over their rivals, even if they can't always offer lower prices. And that can be as simple as offering mobile scan and go technology so people can pay on their smartphones as they go around the store. They don't need to queue. Or perhaps putting QR codes on products so that they can scan them with their smartphones in store, and that will tell them more about the product or unlock promotions. You can have loyalty apps on your smartphone that will do the same thing. Or you can go more kind of experiential with it and offer virtual reality experiences in store or digital kiosks that allow customization and personalization of products. But I really think it's that trying to stop separating the digital and the physical worlds and have an experience where for the customer, they don't say, okay, well, this is your in-store offer and this is your online offer. They see this is the experience I'm having while I'm shopping with this retailer. And so retailers need to make sure that experience is seamless and enjoyable across all of it.
Yeah, this matches the behavior, right? Like I see an ad for a Madewell product. I think I like that product. I look at it and then I think I should go to a Madewell store and try that on. I'm not thinking like I need to buy this online. So I think that it's just like matching the consumer experience.
Exactly. Yeah.
I think everybody's customer journey is different, but I do think that this idea of efficiency and seamlessness across the channels. And it's almost like we used to talk about omnichannel and we should just be talking about commerce, really. And people are shopping in lots of different places. They're getting inspired in lots of different places. And as Karina said, I think this year, the most important thing will be for retailers to pick a lane. You're either super easy, all about value, very efficient. You go in, you leave, which is all of that tech-enabled stuff. Or you're a fun, cool place where you can go and do monograms and you can spend some time doing a Snapchat or like a Instagram or Be Real or whatever it is that's the, you know, media of the day backgrounds, or you can go and do like the beauty makeup counter where they'll do a whole thing with you with a stylist. I mean, there is the idea of the experience in store, which is also really important, but it has to be entertaining and it has to be fun. So you need to pick a lane, but either way, there has to be a reason people are coming to your store.
That value-based store you're describing, the one that's not really as experiential, that one also has the benefit of functioning as a distribution center, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Although that's not really front end, right? That's the back end for the retailer. Front end for the consumer, it's like I scan and go and I leave and I don't have to talk to someone, or I do the self-checkout and then I don't talk to someone, or I have a map of the store with my app so that I know exactly where to go, pick up what I need and leave. So I think there are lots of things you can do that are functional, that are value-driven, that are tech-enabled, but that are not necessarily what we think of as like retail entertainment, right? So I think you have to pick. You're either one or the other, but you can't be both.
So you mentioned twice tech that makes you not have to talk to someone. Is the future of a store not having to talk to someone? Is it a store that functions like a website?
I mean, I'd love to hear what Karina has to say. For me, I think it's not no. I would say no, but I think we will always have people that we want to talk to. It's just like, think about, there are lots of people who use the chat function to get what they need, but a chat bot is horrible. You still want to talk to a person, even though you're just chatting with them. And then there are other people who just call the call center, wait their turn and talk to someone, quote unquote, live. I think from a store perspective, there will be a choice. If you're a customer and you don't want to talk to anybody, you just want to get what you want and leave right away, kind of like at a bank, right? You go to the ATM or you go to see a teller. And now some banks don't even have tellers because they're like, this bank only functions as a basics kind of thing. And then these banks are like where you can go and like hang out and talk to someone and learn more. And so I think it'll be the same for retail, but for sure there will be the option of doing it all on your own versus getting help from someone.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. I think it's about offering people that option because everyone has different preferences and everyone has different personalities. And it's about ensuring that at whatever touch point you're reaching the consumer, you're doing so in a way that reduces any frictions they might have and gives them a good experience. So, you know, I think it's been interesting. We've seen a lot of self-checkouts in the UK, especially in grocery. So you move away from having a cashier ring through all of your products and you check out yourself. And actually, I think that customers can be a little bit cross about those because, you know, you always need to scan something and you need to get it someone to have a look at it to make sure you're old enough to buy it. And people feel like they're doing all the work. And I don't think that those have always been the biggest success. But I think that kind of mobile scan and go is a slightly different experience. That's giving you the speed. You're not still standing in a till just doing it yourself. You're doing it as you're going through the shop. It's a really, you can choose to do it on your smartphone, and it's a quick and easy, no queue way of paying and leaving. And then if you want to have that interaction with someone, then you still have the option to go to a proper checkout and speak to a cashier or speak to a member of staff. So I think it's really about offering that kind of breadth of option.
So while we're on the topic of tech, I want to move into the final trend left on the cutting room floor. We can't talk about 2023, it feels like, without talking about the metaverse. Susie, what can we expect in terms of virtual shopping and NFTs for retail for 2023?
So I think that depending on who you ask, you're going to get a different answer, right? And I think that's the same with all the trends. Like, these are our perspective on some of the bigger trends, but our reports were 5 trends each. So we narrowed it down to the ones that we were excited about and that felt passionate about. And it's the same. There were lots and lots. It's so hard to narrow 5 trends. So there were lots of trends that were left on the cutting room floor for NFTs and Meta and all this other sort of tech-enabled virtual world. I think it's going to be a go. I think lots of brands have been spending time learning from one another. There are, you know, the twinning, which is like you have something for your avatar in the virtual world, and then you also buy the shoes for yourself, so you have the physical good. I think there will be lots of different iterations. Brands who didn't jump on the social media bandwagon early enough sort of got left in the dark. And so I think some of those brands are trying to just get ahead of it now. And now it's inexpensive to get ahead of it, right? Because you're trialing, you don't put a lot of money into it. You're just trying to figure out what is the right thing for your consumer base. I think like with anything else, you need to think through like, what is it? Who are you trying to reach and how can you reach them? And so depending on who your customer is or who you're trying to acquire, then you're going to have different experiences. So for example, Bloomingdale's is doing a whole virtual mall sort of with some pretty big brands. And so I think each brand will have to think about what that looks like. But a brand who doesn't do something in this realm in 2023, I think is going to lose out.
Anything to add? Final thoughts on that, Karina?
Yeah, I think in the UK, I think UK shoppers are more skeptical about the metaverse as a concept, which is perhaps not a surprise. I think we're often more skeptical about a lot of things. but I think rather than kind of full-on meta avatars, virtual shopping, what we're going to see a lot more of is just that VR and AI sort of integrated into the shopping experience. So that can be, like we said, shopping online, virtual try-ons, AI to get your right size, but then also in store to really enhance that store experience. So I think we'll start to see it filter in and creep in, but not as kind of full metaverse quite yet in the UK.
And you know what? That's really in line with what we were hearing at conferences last year. So in June, we were in the UK and everybody was talking about sustainability. In March, we were in Vegas. So before, and everybody was talking about the metaverse and how somehow sustainability was not top of mind for the Americans in March. So I think what Karina said is right on. They're still not there yet. They're frying bigger fish.
I think that we're going to see a lot with AR this year since it's already in people's hands, and probably less or more in store with VR since people don't necessarily have the devices for that. That's all we have time for today. So thank you, Susie, for joining us on the podcast.
Thanks for having me on the second podcast of 2023.
And thanks, Karina, for being here on this first retail podcast of 2023.
Thanks for having me, and it's been great.
Please give us a rating and a review wherever you listen to podcasts, and follow us on Instagram at behindthenumbers_podcast to find out if Susie has taken down her Christmas tree yet. Thank you to our listeners and to Victoria, who edits the podcast and has predicted that in 2023, you can expect a lot more Behind the Numbers episodes. We will be back next Wednesday with another episode of Reimagining Retail, an e-marketer podcast made possible by Tinuiti. And tomorrow you can join Marcus for another episode of the Behind the Numbers Daily, an e-marketer podcast.